Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. Glorious, 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 magnificent week of fall. These beautiful, beautiful trees. Such splendor, such majesty. Majesty for kings, for heroes, and for poets. And here it's given to us humorists to look at. Walk out of your front door, and these great monuments of gold and red and orange and ochre, they're in your front yard and across the street. And you look at it and you breathe in this fall air, sweet and with a chill to it. And everything comes back to you when you were a child. And all the kids you ran around with in the streets and played with in the leaves, and all of your aunts and your uncles, the old men who sat down on the bench in front of Ralph's smoking cigarettes, and when you walked past them, they always stopped talking until you were by. It all comes back to you. And the playground and those kids and the cinders and the time you fell in the cinders and you were sent into the school by yourself to wash off your hands, and you walked past the open door of an empty classroom, your classroom, and you stepped into it. And here were the autumn leaves on the bulletin board and all of the empty desks of your classmates. And up there on the blackboard, your teacher had written in her big, loopy handwriting, "I go, he goes, she goes, they go. I went, he went, she went, they went." The unit on verbs. And you think to yourself, "I will always remember what it was like to be 9 years old." And now here you are. And you are older than those old men who sat on the bench in front of Ralph's. And you walk out your front door and smell and look at the trees. And you think, "Do I know what those old men knew? No, I don't. And almost all of the leaves have fallen." Pastor Inkvist was out raking the leaves between his house and the church. The other day he was wearing his red plaid wool jacket and his beautiful hat that his wife gave him for his birthday 3 years ago. She said that it made him look like a poet. It made him look like William Butler Yeats as a young man. And ever since, he's worn it. Even though in this town, a man wearing a great hat gets a lot of dumb comments from people. People walk by and stop and they say, "Where'd you get the cowboy hat?" "It's not a cowboy hat, it's a poet's hat, but never mind." He says, "My wife gave it to me." And they say, "Well, you get yourself a horse, you'll be all set," they say. And he's supposed to laugh at that, of course. Being the Lutheran pastor, he's supposed to be a good-humored guy. What a dumb thing to say. Not a joke, but, you know, people say a lot of dumb jokes, and you're supposed to just chuckle at them and kind of shake your head as if to say, "Boy, you have me there, you fine fellow. What a fine, sharp wit you have." But it's a poet's hat. It's a hat that makes him look like the man who wrote, "Wine comes in at the mouth and love comes in at the eye. That is all we know of truth, for we grow old and die. I lift the glass up to my mouth, I look at you and sigh." He was raking the leaves, raking them in a big windrow, raking them towards the gutter, the way he used to, just out of habit, going back to the days when we used to rake them into the street and burn them there. What a beautiful thing, burning leaves. But then, of course, they passed a law against it, as people will do sometimes. The town council voted an ordinance, a ban on burning. It had to do with clean air, which, of course, you can't be against, which is one of the problems with democracy. There are a lot of things that you don't dare speak up against, and so they vote them in, but they're crazy nonetheless. He raked them all over towards the gutter, remembering that he had to go back to the garage and get big plastic bags to put these leaves into. And then he heard his phone ring in his office, and he thought about running for it. But he let it ring, and then it stopped. And then Eunice Inkvist walked down the street, married to his cousin Jack, who teaches at the high school. Eunice Inkvist, she was all warmly bundled up. She said hello. She is a low thermostat person, so she's always bundled up from October right through April. She's married to a high thermostat person. Eunice believes that warm air causes stupidity, and there is some evidence for this, she believes. In her own home the other day, her husband said to her, "Whatever happened to that motto that used to hang up over our table, the one my mother gave us?" She said, "The needlepoint one?" She said, "I threw that out 15 years ago. "Oh," he said, "why did you throw that out?" She said, "Because I just got tired of looking at it." "Oh." It was needlepoint and had a picture of an owl. The wise old owl sat up in the oak. The more he saw, the less he spoke. The less he said, the more he heard. Why can't we be like that wise old bird? Eunice took it off the wall. She threw it away. She thought, you know, to encourage silence in a Norwegian, there's no point in this. This is like teaching a fish to swim. There's enough silence in this house. She'd like a little more talk. She came up to the pastor. She said, "Do you think there's a possibility that you could do a baptism this Sunday? I know it's the last minute, but it really would be important to me." "Oh, sure," he said. "We can do that." She said, "It's my nephew's, my sister Nancy's boys are down in the cities. I'm not sure if she's going to let me do this or not, but I really would like them to be baptized. One is 4 and the other one is 7. Would that be okay? Is it okay if I just let you know Saturday night at the..." "Oh, sure," he said. "That's fine." She said, "You bring them in, we'll baptize them." She went off. He went back to the garage to get the big plastic bag to put the leaves in, and when he came back, there was a man standing by the pile of leaves. Strange man, wearing a beautiful tweed wool jacket and a gray sweater under it and a blue button-down shirt under that and tan slacks and gray socks and penny loafers. Obviously nobody from this town. Didn't look Lutheran whatsoever. Man said, "Hi, remember me?" Pastor didn't, but he is the pastor. You're not supposed to not remember people. He said, "Sure. How you been?" "Pretty good. Pretty good," the man said. "Haven't seen you in a long time. I was just driving by on my way up to Fargo. Thought I'd come in. I was kind of surprised to find you still here. What, you've been here like 26, 27 years, haven't you?" Pastor Inkvist said, "Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of surprised myself, actually, but here I am." "Yeah," the man said, "I got out of the ministry way back. Actually, it was right after that pontoon boat went down. You remember that?" "Oh, now Pastor Inkvist remembered him. Oh, yes, he was a man. He had a Lutheran church out western Minnesota. Merle Sanderson, right. He was in that group. There were 22 Lutheran pastors. They were on a fact-finding trip of rural Minnesota. They stopped in town, and Pastor Inkvist was going to give them a weenie roast, and then Wally, down at the sidetrack tap, volunteered the use of his pontoon boat, the Agnes D, and he tossed in 4 cases of beer and donated the brats and the buns and the mustard, and he put the grill right out there in the stern of the Agnes D, and they all went down to the dock, and they got on board. Painful, painful memory. Painful. "Excuse me just a moment, would you?" Pastor said, I've got to. He went into his office. He needed to look up this guy's name to make sure it was Merle Sanderson. He had a picture somewhere in these files. And while he was in the office, he played the message on his answering machine, whoever had called him before. It was a voice, a man he didn't recognize the voice. The man said, "Pastor Inquist? Oh, I'm sorry, you're probably not there. It's okay. I thought maybe you would be there, and I was going to. But that's okay. I'll try you back." He didn't recognize the voice, but it sounded like somebody he might have known. Maybe somebody who went to church years and years ago. Yep, there was Merle's picture. That was Merle, all right. He had more hair. It was a little bit longer over his ears back then. Wasn't quite as well dressed. He went back out. Yeah, I remember that, he said. I remember that pontoon boat. Yeah, that was quite a day, wasn't it? Pastor remembers he was standing on the dock as the pastors, all 22 of them, boarded the Agnes D, and the boat got lower and lower. And finally, he could see that it was about riding about an inch above the water. But he couldn't bring himself to say what needed to be said. He couldn't say, "I'm sorry, you can't all come. Some of you have to get off the boat." He couldn't do that. The last man got on. And Pastor wanted to just push the boat away and wave to them as they went off. "Bye, have fun. Enjoy yourselves. See you later." But he stepped onto the boat, and as he did, he could feel his water fill up his shoe. And off they went, with the coals blazing hot on the grill in the stern, and the men standing shoulder to shoulder, milling uneasily, because as Lutherans, they have to allow themselves 36 inches of space in all directions, and they couldn't. And, oh, it was a painful day. Yeah, Merle said, I got out of the ministry. Right after that, I had 3 kids. They were going to go off to college. I don't know. I just felt like I wasn't doing anybody any particular good. So I went into the securities business, and it's been real good. Been real good. You ever invest in stocks yourself? No. No, Pastor Ingrid said, no, I don't really. He thought to himself, ask him for a contribution. Come on. Hit him up. He can afford it. Ask him. Ask him for $2,000 or $3,000. But he didn't do it. He heard the phone ring back in his office. "Excuse me, son, I'll be right back. I've got to get this call." He dashed back. He picked up the phone, and it was Eunice Inquist. She said, "Pastor, I think we're going to go ahead with this baptism on Sunday, but is it okay to have the full liturgical baptism? I really want to do the whole deal." "Oh, sure," he said. "That's fine. We'll just drop a few things from the service. We'll make room for it. Whatever you need, Eunice, we can do." Eunice wants this baptism for her 2 nephews who are growing up in this dingy apartment in South Minneapolis. Their mother, Nancy, 43. Eunice goes down to see them every week so that Nancy can go off to AA. The boys just seem so confused. They moved back to Minneapolis after she got the divorce. She divorced her husband, Bob, because she told Eunice, "I just felt the marriage wasn't growing anymore." Eunice looked around. She thought, "You know, it's a little warm in here. I think we should turn down the thermostat. That's 75-degree thinking here. Let's get it down to 60, 62. I've had bad patches in my marriage, too," she thought. "Tell me about it. Tell me about it." A lot of times with Jack, she's thought back to the first boy she ever loved, remembered that trembling feeling when she knew that she was going to see him that day, how it felt walking down the street with that boy, with their arms around each other, riding on each other's hips, the smell of him, the feeling of him, kissing her. She's thought about this so often. when she and Jack are not getting along very well, sometimes she imagines meeting that boy in a bar somewhere just to have a drink. And sometimes when she's really not getting along with Jack, she imagines that she's a widow. And that boy comes to visit her from California. And he says, "Nice house you've got here." And she says, "Yeah, I'm putting it up for sale next week. Take a good look." But she has enough sense not to call him up. She's got that much sense. Nancy goes to a church in South Minneapolis. It's got preaching and they've got singing, but you don't necessarily have to believe in God or anything. They don't have a baptismal ceremony, but they do have a ceremony of affirmation of personhood, and they all stand around in a circle. And minister is there in her white caftan, and people are wanging on little drums and tinkling bells, and somebody reads from something from Whitman, and there you are. You're a person. Welcome to the human race. No, she'd like to get the mark of the Lutheran Church on these boys, get the watermark on their heads while they're young, even though they may grow up to be pagans. She'd like to have God be able to look down and see that little watermark there on their cowlick and think, "Oh, all right, well, I guess so." Pastor Enquist planned for this baptism on Sunday. They do a lot of them now in the church. They aren't like they used to be. They used to be that the parents were there and the woman wore a dress and the man wore a suit and they were Mr. and Mrs. and they were accompanied by the sponsors, another young couple who were also Mr. and Mrs. and everybody wore dresses and everybody wore suits and the child wore a white christening dress. And now you just don't know. The husband and the wife, or whoever they are, they have different last names. You don't want to ask, are they married? Who knows? Do they believe in Jesus Christ? I don't know. Maybe they just believe somewhere in the darkest night a candle glows. You don't want to make it too hard on them, because sitting down there in the front row, that's Grandma down there. That's Grandma's idea. Grandma said, when are you going to get this child baptized? So that's why they're here. They're here for Grandma. And the mother told the father, she said, you get your butt down there and you wear something decent. And don't invite any of your rock and roll friends. Don't you dare. So he didn't. And they tilt the child down to receive a little water. And then the pastor takes the child in his arms. Walks down the aisle. And said, "I want to introduce to you the newest member of the family of God." Oh, people dab at their eyes. Everybody cries. That's so great. So he planned on it. But he was thinking about this phone call. He played the message over and again. "Pastor Enquist, oh, sorry. I thought you would be there." He could imagine people it might be. Somebody in terrible, terrible trouble. Somebody who'd called the bank this last week. And the bank was bought by some big bank conglomerate down in Minneapolis, which is a subsidiary of something out on the West Coast, and he had to dial an 800 number to get somebody at the bank, and it wasn't Earl anymore. It was somebody he never met before. And they said that they'd looked at all his figures, and they looked at what the government check would be, and they couldn't extend his credit. They couldn't loan him any more money. They were awfully sorry. But that was that. And now he realized that he'd have to sell the land or have it be foreclosed out from under him. Maybe that was this man on the telephone. And Pastor Enquist sat in his office. And he thought, "Call me, just call me, call me. Come in, we'll just pray together. God is good. The Lord is an ever-present source of help in time of trouble." he could imagine a man sitting in a granary with a shotgun across his knees, listening to his wife calling to him from the kitchen door. Pastor thought, come in. Just call me. Give me a call. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this to them. And then he smelled smoke. He smelled smoke. He ran up the stairs into the sanctuary. There's a little mist in the air. A little mist. But he couldn't see anything burning. He darted out the front door. And there, the leaves in the gutter, they were all on fire. Just as he remembered as a child, he felt so grateful. That was a sign from heaven. By a cloud of smoke during the day and a pillar of fire at night, the Lord led his people. Look at that. He figured that probably Merle had dumped coals out of his pipe, and that's what set that on fire. But nonetheless, it was the Lord's work. You can have left the ministry and gone into the securities business, but the Lord can still use you to set those leaves on fire. It was like in childhood when men stood by the burning leaves and they poked them with a rake to get the flames to leap higher. Men stood together as men do and communicated silently this ancient, mythic ritual of the burning of the leaves that became illegal. The Lutheran pastor, wearing his poet's hat, stood by the leaves burning, and he poked them with a rake to get the flames higher and higher. He could see people were looking out their windows at him. He didn't care. He hit the flames higher and higher. Maybe somebody would see. Maybe somebody would come in. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, all the children are above average.